Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Parsha of the Week class, Parshat Shalach, Spies Like Us. So tonight I would like to begin at the beginning, Genesis 1:3. And we want to focus tonight on the power of speech, Koach HaDibur. And I think it's very significant that the Torah, the Bible, literally opens with God creating our world through speech. Amira, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, Vayehi Or. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. So he created, now obviously this is God, so we're anthropomorphizing a little bit to understand what language means to God. But clearly, by speaking, it became a reality. So that's a very big issue. Secondly, number two on our source sheet. And it says, and the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the soul, nishmas chayim, the soul of life. And man became a living soul. What does it mean? Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, the great Torah commentator from the medieval times, says the following. What does it mean, a living soul? Well, cattle and beasts were also called living souls. But this one of man is the most alive of them all, because he was additionally given intelligence and speech. So the crucial separation between man and beast, B'Tselem Elokim, that we are created in the image of God, is defined here by da'at, intelligence, self-awareness, and the power of dibur, power of speech. So it's a huge issue, but it gets bigger, because it says in Proverbs, in Mishle, number 3, Mavet v'chayim biyad lashon. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Sounds like it's pretty imposing, and I think it behooves us to speak tonight about this parsha from the point of view of speech, because the parsha is defined for the tragedy of all tragedies, the meraglim, the spies. Now, why do I say it's a tragedy of all tragedies? Because even on a personal tragedy, when we, God forbid, lose someone we love, relative, the first moment we leave the cemetery, when we transition from burial, where the emphasis in Judaism is on the deceased, and maximizing the honor, the kavod given to the deceased, we immediately transition into what we call avelut, mourning period. And the beginning is when we have the two lines at the cemetery, and the mourners pass between the two lines, and we have an opportunity to wish nechama, comfort, to the mourners. But amazingly, what do we say? We say, Hamakom yenachem eschem. That's good so far. May God the Omnipresent grant you comfort. But then we add something which is strange. B'toch sha'ar ve'elei tzion v'Yerushalayim. May he comfort you together with the other mourners of Zion and Jerusalem. Zion and Jerusalem? Zion and Jerusalem. What are we saying, in a sense? That your local tragedy, your familial loss, we are connecting it to a greater universal loss that all Jews share, the temple's loss, the loss that is now 2,000 plus years or so in the making, where we are in the diaspora, that loss. And no one ever gets upset and says, wait a minute, why are you connecting my father, my mother, or whoever's death to something that happened 2,000 years ago? No one ever says that. In fact, it elevates, because it's saying that there's a human condition of loss. And we're connecting your personal loss, your local loss, with the universal loss of the Jewish people itself. And it's a very profound idea that the mourner understands. So this section on the spies that we're about to begin in a moment is the creation of that loss. All death and loss comes from the night where the Jewish people cried out, it says, B'chiyah Shechinam, this warrantless, baseless cry. They said, oh my gosh, you're going to get us into Israel. We don't want to go to Israel. It's going to kill us going in there. We'd rather stay in the desert. Thank you. God says, What? You're crying? I don't understand. You should be rejoicing. You've seen the beautiful fruit of Israel. We're about to go to the promised land, and this is your response? You cry for no reason? Okay. Then I am going to be koveya. I am going to establish for you a real reason to cry for the future, not a baseless reason. And so that became the ninth day of Av, Tisha B'Av. That was the night. And that is the night and the next day that every churban, every destruction that befell our people from both temples, pogroms, crusades, 1492, we were kicked out of Spain on Tisha B'Av. All these horrific things that befell our people, World War I and II, there were things there also. They all these calamities fell on that day. So this is the genesis, if you will, of all tragedy throughout life. And it all is a response to what? To speech, of all things. So when we say that God creates with speech, we can destroy with speech also. It's not a small issue. So I believe that in order to really enter into the understanding of what the spies did and why it was so injurious to our people that we're still suffering till this very day, Ad Hayom Hazeh, I think it's important for us just to take a minute and understand what is prohibited by Torah law. So section number 4, Mara Mako number 4, fourth source. This is a quote from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Laws of Talebearing and Lashon Hara. Now, Lashon Hara literally means Lashon, language, tongue in a literal way, of Hara, of the bad, of the evil. Language of the evil. It's almost like there's a language that is of the good and there's a language of the evil. We know how powerful it is, and we know that to this day, every single day of our lives, we deal with this type of event where there is the potential to kind of take information and to utilize this in a not holy endeavor, shall we say. So let's see what the Torah has to say, okay? So it is written in the Torah, it says, Lo telech rechil be'amecha. Do not go around as a gossiper among your people. Okay, so who is a gossiper? What constitutes gossip? Is it, unfortunately, when we're waiting by the checkout line at Price Chopper and we have to see the tabloids? I mean, that's kind of a horrific moment, right? I don't know if you ever go shopping there, but you understand what I'm saying. You see the National Intruder or whatever, and they're sitting with a big, I'm just making up things, you know. And they have their big, you know, headlines about this and that and all the gossip you ever want to know. Oh, my gosh. And people are like with their eyes, they're riveted, and they know their audience, right? They're right there. Our society, if you think about it, has never in history ever had the ability to communicate Lashon Hara quicker. I mean, with all the modes, the tweets and the emails and instant messaging, I mean, things are, I mean, a policeman can do something, look at a person the wrong way, and you'll have 8 million hits within a minute, you know, 5 minutes later, it's all over, it's disseminated all over the world. Once upon a time, it wasn't so easy to disseminate, you know, bad stuff. Now it's instantaneous communication. So this is really difficult. So who's a gossiper? One who collects information and then goes from person to person saying, this is what so-and-so said, this is what I heard about so-and-so. Even if the statements, the information is true, and they are not necessarily disparaging, they're not injurious to the reputation at all, they're not even bad at all, they're good, maybe. Nevertheless, they constitute a violation of the negative commandment. This is a grave sin, and can cause the death of many Jews. So the Torah connects it to the commandment, which is found in the very same verse. It goes on to say, by the way, Lo sikom al dam reyacha. Do not stand still over your colleague's blood. And if you think this is an exaggeration, that bad stuff happens, see what happened to Doeg the Edomite, who told King Saul that Ahimelech gave King David bread and a sword. Even though the matter was true and was not at all deprecating to Ahimelech, for in doing so he did not perform any wrong. Furthermore, if King Saul himself had asked Ahimelech, he himself, Ahimelech, would have told him about what he had done by offering food and a sword to King David, for he did not intend to sin by this against King Saul. Nevertheless, Doeg's gossiping caused the death of some priests. Stop for a second. If you don't know the story, this is from the Book of Samuel. It's a horrific story where David is running away from Saul, who has this ruach ra, this evil mind. His spirit comes over to him. He perceives King David to be his archenemy, even though David loves him. And when he's in normal spirit, he realizes David is his ally, not his adversary. And he's pursuing him. David runs to this city called Nov. Priests only live in this little city, a little village. And Ahimelech, a priest, doesn't understand the dynamic that Saul and David are adversarial. He believes they're lovers, which they were. They were best pals. So he, Ahimelech, who is totally loyal to King Saul, offers food. He gives literally bread, the lechem hapanim, the showbread that was on display there in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary there. He gives him the food to eat, and he gives him the sword that used to belong to the old giant, Orpah's son, Goliath. And that was the sword that he took off Goliath. And he says, you know, you need a little protection. The road is fraught with dangers. He gives him a sword, some sustenance, sends him on his way. When Doeg the Edomite, who was, by the way, not an Edomite, everyone thinks in my mind, well, Edomite, isn't that Esau, Esav? No, he was this Jewish rabbi, a brilliant, brilliant man, who lived near the Edomite nation. So they called him Doeg the Edomite. Hated David's guts. And he reports to King Saul that Ahimelech and the priest gave sanctuary for one night to David. And Saul goes ballistic. He looks at Doeg, he says, what do I do? You know, it sounds like they betrayed me. They're chayiv misa, they deserve death. So he says to Doeg, and no one in his army would touch the priest, you know, rightly so. They're scared. They don't want to touch Ahimelech and the priest. These are Kohanim. So Doeg says, okay, I'll do it. He says, you brought me the message, you take care of it. Doeg has them all assassinated. He murders every one of the priests. So an entire city loses their lives because of gossip, right? Because what did we say? That Ahimelech had no malicious intent ever against Saul. And even Doeg's report was totally truthful. There wasn't one ounce of fabrication. And yet, look how injurious it was. And then the halacha goes on to say, the bottom little paragraph. And this is a crazy statement. There is a much more serious sin than the above. And it is also included in this prohibition. Now, stop for a second. You just told us that there was like a mini genocide committed against the priests. And now you're going to say, well, it is even worse stuff. Really? What could be worse than that? We'll have to come back and talk about that. And what is this called? This is slander. The relating of deprecating facts about one's friend, even if one said the truth. So that is Lashon Hara. True, but injurious to the person's reputation. It means you have nefarious intent against that individual. However, slander is not one who tells lies, because that's even worse. That is called defamation of character of one's friend. Rather, a slanderer, means someone who speaks Lashon Hara, is someone who sits and relates, this is what so-and-so has done, his parents were such and such, this is what I have heard about him, telling uncomplimentary things, this is Lashon Hara. Motzi Shemra, fabricating things, is even a separate category when you lie. So we see that there's actually three levels of injurious talk. There's the simplest level, which is the Torah prohibition in the verse, don't be a gossiper, truth, and no malicious intent, prohibited. Second level, Lashon Hara, true, malicious intent to harm, and then the worst one is where you make it up, and it's meant to harm. So that's the worst of all. Legally, you can be brought into court for that. Have a fun time today trying to prove it. But once upon a time, you know, defamation of character was a real case, a real crime. So what we've understood now is that even saying innocent information ostensibly can lead to tragedy. In other words, Doeg offered up facts. He didn't intend for anybody to get killed, and everyone dies. Lashon Hara, but why should this be so? Okay, let's turn to the next page. Number 5. The Lord spoke to Moshe saying, these are the first words of our parsha from this past Shabbat, Shlach. Shlach, send out for yourself men who will explore the land of Canaan, of Israel, which I am giving to the children of Israel. You shall send one man each for his father's tribe. Each one shall be a chieftain in their midst. So Moses sent them from the desert of Paran by the word of the Lord. All of them were men of distinction. They were the heads of the children of Israel. Numbers 13, 1-3. 6. Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki says, send for yourself men. Why is this section of the spies, dealing with the spies, juxtaposed? Why is there what they call smichut parshiyot, this interrelationship between subject matter with the section dealing with Miriam of the last parsha, Bahalotcha, where Miriam spoke badly about Moses, that Moses was not unique as a navi, as a prophet, and then she got punished with leprosy. So why are they connected? Not only connected by theme, but by location in the Torah. The two subjects, one occurs after the other, because Miriam was punished over matters of slander, of Lashon Hara for speaking against her brother Moshe. And these wicked people witnessed it, but did not learn their lesson. Who were these men that they sent? Who were these wicked men? All of them were men of distinction. Now, whenever the word anashim is used in the Torah, it means anashim, men, distinction, choshev people, important people. So at that time, when they left, they were virtuous. That means that when they were selected, 12, Levi was not represented because Levi would not have an actual territory in Israel. They had cities within the confines of Israel. But they were counting Ephraim and Manasseh as two separate tribes. They were like the half tribes that were elevated, Ephraim and Manasseh. So you still have 12. So when they are all sent by Moses to go to the promised land, they're all great people. What happened? Well, let's see what happened. Number 8, and he came to Hebron. He came to Hebron. It doesn't say they came to Hebron. So Rashi says, well, who's the he here? Well, one of the spies was a man from Judah. His name was Kaleb, married to Miriam, of all people, the one with the slander, and brother-in-law of Moses and Aaron. And he went there alone, hence the singular he came. What did he do? He came to prostrate himself on the graves of the patriarchs, because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are buried there, along with Sarah, Rebekah, and Leah. He just threw himself over their graves in prayer, that he not be enticed by his colleagues to be part of their council, to be one of the evil spies. Thus it says, I will give him, Caleb, the land on which he has walked, Deuteronomy 1:3-6. And it is written, they gave Hebron to Caleb. He actually got the city of Hebron, nice little Jewish place today, with like 180,000 very hostile Palestinian Arabs and about 1,000 Jews, but that's Caleb's inheritance. That's his Yerusha. All right. So let's step back for a second. So you have 12 amazing individuals who left kosher. They were totally kosher when they leave Moses. And yet, 40 days and 40 nights, they spend touring the land of Israel, and all of a sudden, they became not kosher. Kalev is so scared that he's going to become not kosher. The only way he can protect himself is to run to Hebron, which was a dangerous place, not because there were Palestinian Arabs around back then, because they weren't, but there were giants lurking around. And they were, you know, bad guys. If they caught a Jew outside, gone, right? So the giants were there. And he runs and he prostrates himself in the tomb of the patriarch, says, please save me. What do you mean? Just don't speak Lashon Hara. What's the big deal? I don't understand. You have to pray to God and you have to invoke that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob should save you from their counsel? Just say no. What's the big deal? Now you might say, what about Joshua? Because he was the other spy who also did not join the 10 nefarious spies. Well, God had to save him because his name used to be Hoshea ben Nun. And we added God's name at the beginning, Yehoshua. May God save you from the council of the spies. So you need either God directly becoming part of your name to save you, or you need Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob praying, please don't let this poor man Caleb become part of it. What happened? And what happened to these 12 people? What happened? Okay, so the simple answer is the following. They, the leaders, had a problem. They were worried about their re-election. Okay, we always joke that, you know, as soon as a person runs for political office, the first thing they worry about, this really is true, what do they worry about? Financing their next campaign, right? They just got elected or re-elected for the 18th time, and all they can focus on is not the enjoyment of the moment, but how I'm going to win 2 years or 6 years or whatever it is down the line. That's just the nature of, that was the nature of the beast back then, because we said this on Shabbat, that the generation that lived in Egypt had a particular type of dynamic, a paradigm. It was Egypt. Slavery, you had, you know, bad things happening every day with the Egyptian and the persecution and genocide. So whoever rose to prominence in Egypt had unique skill sets. So those guys were leaders, yes. And when they leave Egypt, they're in the desert. Well, the desert's like no man's land. There's nothing going on in the desert. So the status is retained. If they're leaders in Egypt, they're going to be leaders in the desert. But the desert's supposed to be a transitional process to go from Egypt to Sinai to Israel. Boom. The fact that we say, well, in our own minds, but it took 40 years. Yeah, you know why it took 40 years? Because of this. Because the 40 days and 40 nights that the spies spent walking the land of Israel and disparaging the land of Israel in their minds and their hearts to prepare for their return trip and to speak Lashon Hara, to slander Israel, Each year of their wandering was a punishment for each day they spent. 40 days, 40 nights, they get 40 years wandering around in circles, drop dead. Next generation, you guys get to be the leaders in the new land. So what did these guys fear? You know what they feared? If they went directly from Egypt to Sinai to Israel, what special skill set would they have in Israel? They'd be back to the beginning again. Everybody would be in a new country, and they most likely would be passed over for new leadership. And they wanted to retain their power base. They wanted to get reelected. So they felt that, hey, if we can keep the current paradigm in order, if we can just stay in the desert, I don't think they intended to die in the desert for 40 years, but if we retain leadership, we can only retain it here. Let's sabotage the land. So that's one possibility. That's one mindset. I think there's something more going on here. That's what we want to try to explore tonight. It's very strange. What is so enticing about speaking Lashon Hara? It's big. Now, we've all experienced this, okay? Please don't tell me you haven't, because I have many times. You get a little bit of information, and it might be the most innocuous bit of information. But it's good. It's good stuff. It's juicy, you know? And it's almost indescribable how you want to be the first. Did you hear? Did you hear? And it doesn't mean it's going to hurt anyone, but it's good stuff. There is a power that emanates forth from us when we are given information. That's clear. But what's the problem? How you disseminate the information. Okay. It's so alluring that Caleb and Joshua have to literally ask God to help them, please, so I won't find this information enticing. I need help. I need supernatural power now to overcome my natural inclination. It's very strange. Now, we asked a question based on what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch said. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, if you remember, it defined for us the Torah prohibition. It talked about a gossip level, slander level, and then a defamation level, which was totally fabricated. So three different levels, all different gradations of that same sin, not to be a gossiper. And it talked about the idea that even speaking gossip potentially can cause a lot of bad things to happen. And they gave a crazy example of these poor priests who were massacred by Doeg, okay? But then it said, this outrageous comment, that there's a much worse thing than this, and it's called Lashon Hara. Really? You just described for me in graphic detail, I might add, how 80 priests lost their lives, and now you're saying, but there's something worse? What could be worse than this? Strange. Okay, that's something we need to deal with in order to answer up what's going on. I think there's also something else that we need to deal with. And the other issue is, why would speech be something that seemingly is so enticing to us on such a level that it's almost like you, if you go by the law, letter of the law, you can't say anything. Because almost anything you say seems to be, even if it's just positive, and even if it's just true, there's always like pratfalls, right? Because how do I know? If I say something totally innocent in front of the wrong person, and they're an IRS agent or something, I just compliment. Oh, my gosh, so-and-so had such a big year doing this, selling washing machines or something, or selling, nothing personal, Josh, or selling cars or selling homes, or this person, you know, was great, meticulous about this. You say the wrong information, and the person's the wrong person. You don't intend for anything bad to happen. All of a sudden, a person's getting audited or something, and you're like, holy smokes, I didn't mean for that. Yeah, loose lips sink ships. Do you remember the famous expression during the World War II? They literally had signs because the Germans had spies everywhere. And they would wait for like merchant seamen to come because remember, the Americans weren't in the war. I'm Canadian. We were in the war from the invasion of Poland in 39, but America didn't join the fray till 42, really, in the European theater. So what happened? They were very involved, though, in the resupplying of the Allies. So what did the Germans do? They used to station their nefarious U-boats all around on the Atlantic side of our country. And they would wait to hear like merchant seamen make a little offhand remark about, gee, bye, honey. I'm setting sail tonight. And they would get the word out to the U-boat to be on the lookout for you know, a convoy of ships heading back towards England or something. And boom, we lost a lot of people. So we know that this is not a small issue. It's been floating around on the periphery. So I think if we step back for a moment, here's the question I want to ask. What did the spies say that was bad? Well, let's have a look. I think if we answer this question, and it's not a simple answer, we can try to answer up the other question about the power, the allure of speech, and how come Lashon Hara is worse even than when people lose their lives, which seems to be a strange comment, okay? Have a look at number 10. We're going to skip number 9. So let's just do the English. They went, the spies, and they came to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the desert of Paran to Kadesh. They brought them back a report, as well as to the entire congregation, and they showed them the fruit of the land. Stop for a second. By the way, they were never told by Moses that this should be a media event. Moses dispatched them to come personally to him and him alone with the information that they would gather. The fact that they set up a stage and had media there and had everyone there with a dais to hear this report was a total invention of the spies. This was not the intent of Moses or the elders who sent them. This is their own choice. Okay, so they come back, and like any good liar, Rashi says, they start off with truth. They expose the fruit of the land. But the fruit of the land, and you can read this in number 9, after, it's so large and big and warped, they said, well, just like the land is warped that would produce a fruit like this, the whole issue is warped. But that's a side point. And they said, they told them the following, true, we came to the land to which you sent us, Moses, and it is flowing with milk and honey, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udavash, and this is its fruit, Zep Pirio. However, the people who inhabit the land are mighty, and the cities are extremely huge and fortified. And there we even saw the offsprings of the giant. Andre the giant was there himself. The Amalekites dwell in the southland. Of course, the Amalekites are bad guys, right? Because that's Haman's. Those are the guys who attacked us when we left Egypt. So that's going to have a very powerful resonance with the people. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, bad guys, they all dwell in the mountainous region. And the Canaanites, we all know how tough they are, they dwell on the coast and alongside the Jordan. The people go ballistic. What are we doing? And they cry to God, we would have been better off just staying here. Let's go back to Egypt. Give us a leader. We'll go back. Think we're better with Yul Brynner and the boys back in Egypt. Okay, let's go home. What did they say? So this is not a small issue. Moses in Deuteronomy says things about how challenging the land of Israel is, much worse than the spies just said. Because everything the spies said, the fact that their cities are fortified, true. The giants are there, true. Everything they reported was absolutely factual, letter of the law factual. Moses said even worse, more imposing things about the land in Deuteronomy. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, like I said, every great rabbi needs an acronym, right? So the Ramban, who's a great biblical scholar, deals with this question. And he goes like literally verse by verse, and he analyzes and microanalyzes, you know, really microanalyzes. What did they do wrong? And he goes through every tact, you know, every approach. What did they say? Was it not? So there's only one thing that he points to that they said, outside of the fact that they had no right to set up this media event, to stage the New York Times and CNN, Canaan News Network. Nobody should have been there. Should have just been exclusively in front of Moses and the elders. So that was a problem. But that aside, they didn't say anything wrong. But they said one word that they should not have said. Do you know what that word was? Have a look at the Hebrew. They said, it's right in number 10 above. They said, Ephes ki az ha'am. However, the nation is so strong, Hayoshev Aretz, that dwell there. Now, the word Ephes in Hebrew actually means zero. But in biblical Hebrew, not modern Hebrew, it means like but, however. Now, I ask you the following question. Please don't take this personally, but if you ever comment to me like this again, you'll know where it comes from. You ever have a person who you ask, well, how was Kaplan's class tonight? So you say, well, you know, started out, it was pretty strong, and I thought it was good context to it, and it was pretty good. But you know, okay, stop. But you know means, what does that mean? Everything that I just said to the word but was garbage. That was just a color code and make it seem like it was okay, because I don't want to offend Kaplan, correct? But when you get to the word however, fine, now you're telling me how you feel. That's absolutely true. Please don't take it. I mean, we all do this, right? There are some, well, how was the show? Well, you know, it was pompous. It was delivered well. But, you know, it went on a little too. Now you're telling me the truth, you see? That's what they did. They editorialized one word. One word. Ethos. However. So in other words, they start off, it's great. Land, it's beautiful, here's the fruit, it's flowing with milk and honey. However, oh my God, we're never going to get in there. Even with God's help, we have giants and it's so formidable. So the Ramban, Rachmanides, points to just one word. And the word ethos happens to mean zero. So you know what they were saying? Amazingly. Zero chance of success, guys. It's over. It's a big, fat ethos. No chance of success. Whether God's with us or not, it matters not. It's a big zero. Don't go. That was the one word, amazingly, that they used. And that word, they walked the line from information givers to balei lashon hara, people who slander and malign. One word. Amazing. Now, what's even more amazing is that you will see this now when we go back to source number 4. I'm going to show it to you inside the Shulchan Aruch, in the code of law that we spoke, the whole thing about the laws and the different three levels of halacha. I'm going to show it to you right now, okay? It is written, source 4, do not go around as a gossiper among your people. Stop. The words are lo teilech. Holech, to move, to go. Stop. A gossiper is someone who goes and gathers information. My father, Olav Shalom, was in the newspaper business all of his life. So what do you, and he worked as this type of person when he was a little kid. You know what you call a person who does this? It's called a beat reporter. Beat reporters, I don't know if they even exist today because of technology, right? You have a beat reporter. What's their job? They have a beat. My father's job was, you know, you go to the hospital or you go to the morgue, whatever the sports events. That's your beat. You got to gather information. So what are you after? Just information. You go to the scene of the crime. You get the names of the people involved in the car accident. You gather as much information as you can, and then you bring it back to the higher-ups. Okay. So what is a gossiper according to halacha? One who goes around gathering information. And in fact, once upon a time, they were the ones who peddled the information. That's why they're called rechil, means a peddler. Because peddlers would go from town to town. So you'd say, where were you? Oh, I was just in the city of Warsaw. Oh, really? Tell me, how did the Warsaw soccer team look like? You walked by their field, right? Did they look good? You know, they would have the gossip. In other words, the peddlers who went from city to city or town to town and village and shtetl to shtetl, traditionally they were the ones who peddled information. Okay, but now how do you describe, according to Torah law, in the halacha, in the Kitzushan, how do you describe somebody who speaks Lashon Hara? Have a look at the bottom. There is a much more serious sin than the above, and it is also included in this same prohibition. And this is slander. The relating of deprecating facts about one's friend, even if one said the truth. And what is it? However, slander is not one who tells lies. That is called defamation of character of one's friend. What is a slander? Here are the key words. Rather, a slanderer is someone who sits, and relates. This is what so-and-so has done. His parents were like this. Ah, I don't get me started. You don't want to know all the horrible things this person did. Now, why do you think? Do you think it's by chance that the Mechaber, the author of the Torah laws of tale-bearing, when it comes to gossiping, he deliberately says, what's a gossiper? Someone who's moving, who's going, who's gathering information. But what is somebody who says slander, says Lashon Hara? He's someone who sits at a desk and speaks Lashon Hara. Well, in a newspaper, they actually have a name for this. You know what they call them? Desk editor. It's an actual job. So the beat reporter takes the information, brings it to the editor, What does the editor do? He decides, or she decides, how it will be written, and therefore how it will be disseminated, but more importantly, the slant, the agenda. Oh, well, we have an agenda. We're the New York Times, so obviously if Israel really didn't kill anybody in Jenin, then that must be a lie. So that's going to be on, you know, page number 97.5, you know, retraction to bottom of the page. The desk editor is the one who processes the information, and then more importantly, what do? They present it to the world. Amazing. So what did Moses ask the spies to do? Get information. I don't want your take on the information. You're not there. I'm sorry. I'm Moses. I have God on my side. All I want you to do, Moses said to the 12 spies, is go to the promised land, walk around this promised land, gather information, and bring said information back. No more, no less. That's what you should do. So they come back, they take the information, but they've had 40 days and 40 nights to sit together and process and plan an attack. And so therefore they're so brilliant that the attack is embedded within truths and half-truths. Therefore the only word that they added was, we have no chance, Ephes, it's a zero chance of success. What? Who gave you the right to editorialize? No one gave you the right. I asked for information. You editorialized. So that one word, they crossed over from information gatherers to spies. And that's why we lost the world. We asked a question. How can it be that worse even than the killing of the priests in Nov is slander? Because think about it for a moment. All you have and all I have in this world is our perception of how we see the world. There's nothing more, nothing less than it. There can't be. A slanderer takes their viewpoint of how they see things, which is okay. We're all entitled to have our own viewpoints. It's not good enough for them. They want to present the world and have you buy into it from their perspective. So they are literally stealing your reality. And since there really isn't anything else other than the reality and our perceptions of our world, what could be more injurious to our world than someone who plays God and says, well, it's not enough that I have the information. I'm going to process it for you, and I'm going to present it to you in the way that I see the world as a reality, so you will come to see this reality. God says, really? It's over then. If this is the reality that you did about Israel, Israel will never be yours. It can't be. So I believe that this is the root cause of the evil that we talked about. That, in other words, what was so alluring to Caleb and Joshua? The same thing that is alluring to us. The information is powerful. Oh my gosh. It's powerful to be the first person to deliver a report or the news, right? It's hot off the press. But as long as the news just remains fact gathering, it hasn't crossed over into a prohibited area. It only transgresses a biblical commandment. It becomes a problem when I take that information and I sort of play with it and toy with it and deliver it with you, to you, and present it to you as if it's reality. That becomes a problem. Now, why does that become such a problem? Because who are you to deliver this information to me? You're not God. Only God has the capability of purely understanding on the God level what information means. Anything that it goes through my little mind, I have an agenda, whether I like to believe it or not. Moses was the only individual ever lived who had no ego. But the rest of us have an ego. So like it or not, when information goes through our brains and is processed there, even if the best of intentions, it can't help but have a little massaged area here or there, because that's our experience, nature, nurture, whatever you want to call it. And I believe that it's so injurious because it controls. It's like the rape of the mind. It's the most hurtful thing in the world. And if you think it's a small issue, think of what's happened to our beloved Israel. Think of what they've done to Israel. Do you think it's coincidence that the spies' attack was against the land? It was against the land itself, an inanimate object. And what did it do? Killed the entire generation. They're all wiped out. And yet, we're seeing a repeat beyond words to describe how they are maligning our country in every way, right? Culturally, educationally, anything you want to pick out, they take the information, and it can be absolutely true information. But if context is stripped away from the information, then it ceases to become a reality. And people want to control the reality. I really fear, and I'm sure you all fear, when you have societies that are antagonistic towards Israel, that are literally educating their children with nightmarish visions of what a Jew is and what Judaism is about. Who are you going to make peace with when the other person believes that we're the devil and they're checking under your yarmulke for horns, essentially, that we're baby murderers and that? How could anyone have a peace process there? Very scary thing. This is the source of our Churban. This is the source of our destruction. And as we spoke about it on Shabbat, it's not a simple thing. And I'll just end with this following little aside. The temple was lost because of Lashon Hara. It says that was the root cause. Now, it's very, very difficult to understand because we've heard of like Sinat Hinam, Jewish baseless hatred. But the bottom line is, people cried that night for no reason. In other words, their cry was based on a fabricated report. One word, ephes. And their response was to shatter. They thought their world was shattered. God's going to murder us, bringing us into the land of Canaan. And the actual truth was the opposite. It was a gift. In fact, they took one little tidbit of information that we did not mention yet. They said that the earth, the land of Israel, ochelet yoshvahi, it consumes its inhabitants. Because everywhere we went, people were being buried. They were all dying of disease. Well, was that true? Absolutely. See, God brought a disease on the Canaanites, so they'd be too preoccupied with burying their own dead and sitting in Shiva and whatever to not notice these 12 very strangely dressed strangers who were kind of circumventing the area, staying at the Holiday Inn and asking a lot of questions. So to protect the spies, God had like a little bit of a plague affect some of the Canaanites. So they took that information, which was true, and then they usurped God's goodwill against us and threw it back at us. So I believe that it's a very, very daunting experience. And as we said, we lost a temple because of Lashon Hara, but it's not easy because how we use language is how we communicate. That's how God created a world. It's how we create our worlds, is through the use of language. And there's such a slippery slope there. So there's, at the end of the day, there's no way to get past the idea that it's not our right to editorialize. It's our right to deliver information, yes. It's our right to do our best to just make it parv. Shouldn't be melchik or fleishik. It should just be what it is. And let people editorialize themselves. And if they want to editorialize, they can. Now, even that could be dangerous, as we said, because when you're presenting information, it could become gossip. It has its own level of problems. But clearly, when you take information and process it and try to present it to people without the ability to respond to it, it just becomes the official editorial position of the New York Times, as if, you know, all 1.something million subscribers all believe this is true. You know, you see it in print, and it's really one guy at the editorial that's writing this editorial and maybe writing it by the boss. It's like two people's opinion, but it has the power of many. It's a very scary thing. Our world is filled with this today, and I just wish there was some way to do what Kalev did, and we'll end with this. As we said in Shabbat morning, Kalev plays a part. He pretends to go along with the spies. And he waits and he waits for 40 days and 40 nights. And they're having a barbecue each night, eating their beef jerky by the fire. And you know what Kalev is doing? He's sitting with the 10 bad guys. Joshua's over there, because they don't want Joshua anywhere near them. They know which side Joshua's on. My gosh, he's Moses' man. But Kalev, even though he's the brother-in-law, he's kind of given implication to them that maybe I'm with you guys. And he waits and he waits and he waits. And they set up the dais, the microphone's there. The 10 spies get up and they start lambasting Israel. Ephes, it's a big fat zero chance. And then Kalev yells out, "Is this all that Ben-Amram character did to us?" And everyone stops. Ben-Amram, that's Moses' name, but without his own name. That's the most offensive way you can refer to Moshe. It's only Moshe Rabbeinu. And you're calling him the son of Amram, like he's a little boy, like a little kid, right? Really? So everyone went, "Hey, shut up. Be quiet, everybody." Vayahas, it says, he quieted everybody. So you have a million people waiting there. Kalev gets up to the microphone. And he has like about 8 seconds. Because he knows that what he's going to say, he got them all to shut up, yes. But he's got about 8 seconds to save the day. And so he speaks really, really fast. You can almost picture this in your mind's eye, you know, that, yes, Moshe split the Red Sea for us, and he gave us the manna, gave us the Torah, and if he says, go to Israel, we should go to Israel, right? And probably 8 seconds later, they're hurling tomatoes at the poor guy. But he had 8 seconds to get the word out. Please, the emperor has no clothes. It didn't work, but as we said in Shabbat, it's our job to stand up now and to yell to the world, to any audience we can get, that the emperor has no clothes. And the clothes he's wearing is an old shmata that Arafat conjured up, this little agenda back in the 1980s to flip the paradigm against Israel. And all this speech, it's all from Arafat. If you want to look up your history books, go online and learn about, you know, the intifadas and all the stage things that he's done to our people, to Israel, the manipulation of language. So again, we should have the intestinal fortitude, the courage of Kalev, the silent courage of Kalev to be able to get up and defend Israel when we need to be. And I wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom.